everybody. Welcome to the Think Truth Podcast. We're Drew and Paul here to talk about spiritual abuse. And Paul, I know you recently wrote a post on our blog about spiritual abuse, so maybe you can give us a little bit of context.
Yeah, so basically the post was a summary and sort of overview of themes and material from Michael Kruger's really excellent book called Bully Pulpit, which is all about this phenomenon, this problem of spiritual abuse in churches and beyond. It's really a fantastic book. It's kind of short, and it goes through a lot of the issues, the problems, the steps towards solutions. And so that I posted, we posted recently, and we thought we'd talk some more about how this, you know, looks in everyday life and maybe some ways that we've seen this type of behavior play out, and how to respond to it. Right. So it's a pretty heavy topic. Mm-hmm. And I think there's probably people, I feel like people are going to be at maybe two places, maybe three, but kind of there's going to be people out there who, when they read Kruger's book or my post on it, or they listen to this, they resonate right away. They say, That's what I experienced. Like, this is what happened. And then there's going to be other people who have had only healthy church environments, and they may be more skeptical, and maybe it seems sort of implausible. Maybe even seems like when we talk about this, we're simply casting doubt on ministers, mm-hmm. or being suspicious or that sort of thing. And then there's people in the middle who've just probably never thought about it either way. But like, I think that second response is important to kind of talk about,
sure.
right away, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I mean, I'm sure you've heard that type of take when you start talking about people's like, well, are you just anti-authority or just holding all ministers in suspicion or that sort of thing?
Right. I mean, maybe a case in point, I wrote a post on Gothard and the umbrella of authority idea. He has recently got a comment where someone was pushing back, basically saying, you know, the left and the media, I don't know if they mentioned the left. I think they mentioned one of the two, like the media's tearing down authority. So like, we need to like stand up for basically like, there's nothing to see here. Gothard's fine. We're just attacking Gothard. He's been tarred and feathered. Almost this idea of not wanting to be open to the idea that maybe someone was in a position of power and abused it, partly in reaction even to negative attacks on authority. I think that's mm-hmm. often what fuels it.
That's a really
good
point.
Because you hear people that take down authority unfairly mm-hmm. and see how society doesn't have enough respect for it. And so then people put, I think, legitimate concerns about authority into that,
right.
into that camp.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And so, I mean, we want to say right at the outset, authority is not an intrinsically bad thing. It is meant to be a good thing. Mm-hmm. However, in a fallen world, I think the Bible is like pretty open and clear about this, that very often authority/power ends up being used for the benefit of those in power. That's not a leftist idea.
Right.
It's not a modern idea. Mm-hmm. And as Kruger points out, the things that Jesus has to say about authority are very much along the lines of pushing against the common cultural expectations of authority in his day. Right. So, we should expect that our discussion of spiritual abuse should be in line with the types of things that he says, the Apostle Paul says. Kruger points to these passages where Jesus speaks of, I mean, his quintessential teaching on authority in the church is it should not be like right. the Gentiles in terms of people, you lording it over mm-hmm. other people. And then Paul says that ministers must not be basically a bully, right? And so this is not, this critique is something that is very central to what the New Testament says about how leaders are supposed to be. I mean, Peter says the same stuff. This goes back to the Old Testament too, about what Israel's king's supposed to be.
Right.
So I think what we want to say is if you're suspicious listening to this, you're like, we shouldn't be talking about this. We should be talking about how we should be like, putting our foot down and saying, no, authority is a good thing, to kind of maybe think twice before you just, continue in suspicion, because that that sort of that reactionary approach can miss the teaching of Jesus in the New Testament. Mm-hmm. And that then leads to some of the reason for the reactionism in our culture is precisely because people have had legitimately bad experiences with abusive authorities.
Right.
And so for us to just say, no, I think we're missing a good opportunity to get back to what Jesus talks about, right, which is not an egalitarian, anything goes, there's no authority, but it's a sense that that authority must be used for the good and the flourishing and not the control of those under you.
And I think when those people try to kind of have this misguided defense of authority in cases where they shouldn't be defending authority, that's a large part of what enables the abuse to go on unchecked, because then there aren't people there to call it out. And then people who are in those situations are likely to react not only to the bad instances they've seen, but just react beyond that, feel like authority in general. And I think we've seen a lot of that. People that have been in genuinely bad situations, they're just like, you know, I'm done with this whole thing. Like,
yeah.
They throw the whole thing out.
Right.
So absolutely, like, if you actually care about biblical authority, you really want to make sure you look over cases where it isn't exercised
well. Right, right. Authority, it's not just good to have authority.
Exactly.
It's good to have good authority.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. And Kruger talks about this, but beyond that, we've seen this in our own mm-hmm. our own situations where the way that abusive spiritual leaders continue to manipulate is by manipulating other people to side with them, mm-hmm. playing the victim, playing like everyone's out to get me. I'm the hardworking pastor.
Right.
And you should kind of side with the authority in the church type of thing. And that's part of the MO of spiritual abusers.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot abuse people continually if the rest of the church doesn't go along with it.
Yeah.
And when just to recap, when we talk about spiritual abuse, we're talking about spiritual leaders using their status as someone with God's authority behind them to basically weaponizing God's authority, the authority of the Bible, the authority of the church, to manipulate, to silence, to destroy people under their care. So it's not simply verbal abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Kruger talks about this. You can have an abusive employer, right? Which is bad. But this is an extra layer of bad because it's not just somebody who's over you in some generic sense, but it's somebody who's basically enacting, almost as though through them, God is abusing
right.
you.
Yeah.
And this is where it can be, like you said, it can be devastating beyond just, that was a bad experience, I need to try to get over it, but it can color the way one views the church and one views God. And it happens, mm-hmm. you know, a lot that people lose their way in really significant, you know, ways because of the type of damage.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think to the verse where Jesus says it's better for a millstone to be thrown around someone's neck and to be cast into the sea than to make a little, you know, a weak believer in Jesus stumble. So this is, a serious topic.
Yeah, and I think it's really deadly when people, because I think there's a proper sense where we want to see our leaders as kind of mini exemplars of the kind of faith we want to live.
Right.
And then when they say something to us that's abusive or hurtful, and they're standing in that role, then it's very hard not to feel like it's, like, as you said, in some way it's God feeling this way towards us. And then we very often, I think in these cases, people come away with a view of a very judgmental, mm-hmm. hard to please, kind of irate God. And that can be really hard to work through.
Right.
Because it's, where do you separate it?
Right.
And then again, we have people who are going to go far in the other direction and then kind of feel like, you know, there isn't a true sense of authority even with God because they reject the authority
right.
they saw with
right.
the abusive leader. And then sometimes they have to kind of almost build up from the ground a proper sense of
right.
the authority that we should see both for our own leaders and also the way God, you know, isn't just there, you know, as a as a Santa Claus, like right, give us right. everything we want, which I think is a way some people try to kind of cope from their with right. their experiences.
That's true. Yeah,
kind of heading in that direction, which is also problematic.
It is problematic, but at the same time, that's what happens
yeah.
when people are in abusive situations, mm-hmm. and sometimes it takes some. It takes
yeah.
an incredibly long time to work through that, and we can't rush that too mm-hmm. much because that is the outcome of this type of thing. Sometimes
and we can't be more frustrated with people who are responding in those reactionary ways than people who are perpetrating.
Well, exactly. That just makes no sense.
The problem in the first place.
Right. So. No, the victims aren't to be chided mm-hmm. for not getting over it fast. The best way to help people get over it, I think, is to model really healthy environments.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe very, very slowly, people who have suffered at the worst will
yeah.
Very slowly see, hey, this might be an exception,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think both of us, so this is where I kind of wonder, like, it'd be very interesting to do like a survey or something mm-hmm. and see like how many people sort of in our own circles believe they have experienced spiritual abuse or have seen it sort of in their churches or whatever. Cause it doesn't happen in every church.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't happen. Sometimes there's phases where there's a leader who kind of veers that way. And I mean, I say this in the post, but I'm so grateful right now for the leaders I have at my church because they are so, the example of humility, of not manipulating, not wanting to control people, but still wanting to provide leadership is really healthy and really, really exemplary. And yeah, so I always a shout out to my pastors, our pastors who,
right.
Who I think really exemplify this well.
Yeah.
But both of us have both know people and also ourselves have mm-hmm. experienced situations where the authority of a spiritual leader or the church was misused in pretty dramatic fashion. So I mean I have there's a couple of examples, but in one case it was a church that was very fearful of, I think they were very fearful of youth going astray. Mm-hmm. They were very fearful of, drift and that sort of thing. And then one of the leaders in particular, was just a pretty, hard type of individual. And he, in his better moments, admitted that, but then didn't do enough. He could see it sometimes, but then he kind of stayed in it, which is a fundamental problem. And what we saw there was the crushing weight of this narrow feeling like young people could hardly measure up, and sort of the gun was always sort yeah. of trailed at them type of thing. And then some pretty hard ways of handling specific situations with younger, especially with younger people that left them, you know, in multiple cases, you know, pretty devastated. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, these leaders were involved in really ugly stuff that was going on, fights and stuff in the church. It was both we're going to use our authority to kind of clamp down on little infractions that we think you young people are doing. And then we're going to act like pretty unchristian people to each other. That's like the worst combo. Yeah. And the outcome was so many young people lost their way.
Right.
And of the, you know, the leader ended up, his family, a lot of his family ended up losing out and
yeah.
it was bad. But again, that was enabled because not enough people in the church said, wait, we get it. Like we share a lot of the concerns. We don't want our young people going astray either, but this is precisely not the way to exhibit why being a Christian is a beautiful thing. And so I think that sometimes spiritual abuse happens in contexts that are predisposed towards mm-hmm. narrowness and heavy-handed approach towards sort of drift and that sort of thing. But it's not always that way. Sometimes, like, that's one case. But you could have very conservative churches that aren't that way. There's plenty of those. Mm-hmm. And then you can have churches that are quite free and everything else that happen to have a leader who's just very power hungry.
Right.
So you can't You can't say this kind of church, because it's very conservative, is going to be abusive. No, mm-hmm. there's tons of conservative churches that are very much not abusive. And there's tons of more liberal churches that are.
Mm-hmm.
Some, you know, the ways that those things will work out will differ a little bit depending on the environment, I suppose.
Yeah. I feel like the book, and I read The Bully Pulpit a while ago, I feel like the book gets into this. Maybe your post kind of covers this as well, but I feel like a lot of the issue for people who are, say, not an authority and thinking about potential for abuse, or maybe thinking about abuse that has happened in their past. Like, we need to be super careful, obviously, not to victimize people who have been in those situations. But I feel like there's also a sense where most of these things are enabled because of people who actually kind of want a leader to... Mm. They like the charisma. They like the confidence that this leader portrays.
They're attracted to it.
There's something, for them that makes life seem simpler. They want to have this charismatic, outgoing person. And usually these people are gifted, and they aren't people that... don't have anything going for them. They're able to speak well. They can really move people with their sermons. Maybe they have genuinely have a really good gift at reaching out and caring for people. I mean, if they didn't have any of that, no one would be paying attention to them.
Right.
But I think usually what happens is there is a certain sense of almost, you could say, like emotional dependency, or certainly spiritual dependency in a way that isn't meant to be, that people want to have in this leader.
Mm-hmm.
And then they feel better about their lives because there's a lot of homework that perhaps they should be doing about their lives, but they can feel like, you know, well, this guy's kind of leading out. I respect him. And then, you know, if he says something in a sermon, he comes down with a hard position. Well, you know,
this is God's word to me.
Yes. And so it makes it a lot simpler for people. And a lot of people just don't want to do the work in many cases. And they kind of like having the sense of, I think, artificial security that comes from someone like that. And so I think it's only fair to acknowledge at the outset. So there are people who are victimized who are, you know, it's not their fault that this happened. Maybe they're in a family that chose to go to a church like this or whatever.
Yeah.
But if there weren't lay people that were looking for this, it wouldn't happen.
Right. No, that's a good point. And again, this is not, I mean, in many cases, that's not the reason for why. And it's still not an excuse for abusing somebody.
Of course, yeah.
However, I mean, it's the same thing in politics, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, people want a strong man.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get strong men, and then they're usually not as great as people think.
Right.
So yeah, and that, I mean, that's something Kruger talks about in the book, is like we're looking for people like that. Mm-hmm. We tend to be looking for a strong, charismatic person, like mini Messiah that we can follow. And we think that giftings is what we should primarily be concerned about.
Right.
Rather than character. And that's something he really emphasizes, that the quality, giftings are important, but the qualities we should be looking in a leader primarily are character and not, and yeah, giftings are great, but character is infinitely more important. And And then we should structure our churches such that there is never one leader who has too much too much invested into, like, too much authority put in, given to them, and too much, like, of all the hopes and dreams of the church placed on him.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why, I mean, like, the New Testament is all about a plurality of elders, and our churches, mm-hmm. I mean, I think by and large follow that, which is great.
Yeah.
But I think where we can fail is, sure, we have a plurality of leaders, but they all kind of want to cover for each other and speak with one voice, and then the church doesn't want to contradict them.
Right.
And then we can end up having a situation that veers that way. So it's actually important for good leaders. I mean, I say this, but it's really important for, you know, it's not a suspicion thing. Like, I don't think you can do it, but it's really important that good leaders and the church knows that the church is there to provide accountability to the leaders.
Mm.
Just like the leaders' responsibility is to hold the church accountable, but the church's responsibility is to hold the leaders accountable.
Yeah, needs to go both ways.
It has to go both ways. And nobody should start accusing people in the church of making them feel bad when they are exercising, right, respectfully and well and in the right context, that sense that the church is here to provide some accountability for the leaders. That doesn't mean we distrust the leaders. That means we're trying to do what we can to keep the leaders safe.
Right.
And if they're good leaders, it honestly can mean that we're trying to keep them from false accusations,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
So I think that's having having it sort of known that in the church, the members of the church have certain responsibilities, and there are certain cases in which they may offer some pushback and say, just to be safe, not because we don't trust you, but just to be safe, can we hear some more about this whatever? Mm-hmm. So that the weak people in the church know, okay, if I do have a problem, this is probably a safer environment. Mm-hmm. And the pastors know there's much less chance I'm going to be falsely accused. Mm-hmm. And it's a safeguard for them as well.
Right. What can't happen, and I think happens variously in different contexts, is when simply the fact that someone has a criticism or a concern with the leader is itself seen, like, at the outset, like, something's wrong here.
Right.
Especially when these people, you know, they're charismatic leaders, they have very thriving, growing church, and it's like, well, God's moving here.
Right.
So, like, if, and then we get into this kind of messed up idea here, which we see very much played out, say, like, in Mark Driscoll,
yes,
Mars Hill, like, well, yeah, you know, God's blessing my church, look at how big it is. So, right. How could something really right, be wrong here? And the answer is, things could be very
right,
wrong.
Right. God's blessing. Yeah. God uses crazy situations and people that says nothing about one's character.
Yeah.
I mean, which should be obvious, right? Because Jesus says, like, there'll be people who say, hey, we prophesied in your name. Yeah. We've done all sorts of miracles. And Jesus is like, fine, but I don't know you.
Yeah.
So there is no necessary correlation between godliness and amazing things happening. Right. But if there's going to be that kind of accountability in the church, it's extremely important that conversely the members do their part in supporting, blessing, encouraging. It can't just be every so often we're like, I have a criticism. Right. No, that's terrible. And that can become abusive on the church's part. Mm-hmm. It's gotta be a situation where there's fundamentally it's a relationship of support, trust, blessing, that sort of thing. And not an attitude of suspicion or critique.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. What are some other things that you've taken away from maybe your own experiences or from other people you've talked to or heard about that maybe specifics, anecdotes, or whatever, or just lessons that Kruger didn't talk about in the book, but that you've encountered?
Yeah, I feel like, and I think this is a place where we can both hold others accountable and also think about ourselves. There is something that is often behind the bluster and manipulation of an abusive leader. There's this sense of looking to the flock to fulfill certain unmet emotional needs that the leader has. Mm-hmm. And so then there's this sense of, by having a certain level of control or a certain level of backing, whatever, from the congregants, then that is, you know, in some way feeding the ego, making the person feel better.
Right.
Which I think is ultimately, I think in all these cases, the strong leader that's abusing people is, deep down, this person is actually quite vulnerable.
Yeah.
And which is why they're kind of using this power to kind of fulfill needs that they have.
That's so true.
So, and I think it's also where we ourselves, I mean, I think most of you are listening probably have some level of authority, even if it's just younger siblings in your home or something. But, you know, for me as a husband and as a teacher, on my bad days, I look to those under me to somehow feed my own ego, make me feel better about who I am as a person. And I think it's good to be aware that that can be there and that that is the seed from which really bad situations start.
Because once you
kind of look to others to fill that and expect that to kind of take care of your own problems, then you can be in a really bad place really
very fast.
Whereas someone who's actually doing well, who's, you know, has good relationships, has very close walk with God, doesn't need this certain level of approval from everyone. They can handle the criticism. They don't have to... You know, maybe the leader looks strong when, you know, someone brings something up and then, you know, it's weaponized against them. But, you know, a man who does that, and I think this is also a good way for us to think about it, you know, perhaps especially as men, a man who responds to criticism by, you know, pulling some kind of mastermind manipulative thing to win the day is a weak man that's fundamentally trying to hide the fact that he's not everything he needs to be.
That he's not perfect.
Yeah. And I think... We need to be really careful in all of us in our own lives that we aren't in some way doing that. And
yeah,
I think
that's convicting for me.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Because, yeah, too much of my own identity is too often bound up in what others think of you know, how I'm performing in various ways. And that using ministry as a way of, because you need it, that's dangerous.
Right.
Very dangerous.
It goes bad places really fast.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's very good. And so at the end of the day, in that we have to, our churches need to emphasize the gospel that we're not perfect. Mm. That's the whole point. Like Jesus has died for us and accepted us as in very flawed people. And therefore we shouldn't be surprised when lo and behold, it turns out we're not perfect. And, and you know, we shouldn't expect ourselves to be perfect. And therefore, and this is like easy to say, harder to do, like when we are criticized for something, but also we shouldn't expect our leaders to be perfect, put them on some sort of a pedestal and then think they're either perfect or that means they're terrible. And so sometimes that means I cannot believe anything about them that's flawed, because otherwise I'd have to like undo them, right? And that itself can lead to disaster. But also I think, yeah, if we can say, hey, our expectations, our leaders are godly people, but being a godly person includes being flawed.
Yeah.
And nobody has to put up this sort of pretense of perfection.
Right.
I think that can kind of lower the stakes in this type of thing and just be healthier.
Yeah, because I feel like there's two very strong tendencies, reactions that kind of in their own way fail to see how, you know, the line between good and evil goes down every human heart.
Yeah.
Because you have people more on the, you might say, the more right-leaning side that just don't want to be, they just don't really want to face the fact that leaders are as flawed as they might be.
Right.
And then you might say the more left-leaning tendency, which is just to kind of criticize power itself instead of seeing that, you know, the issue here isn't fundamentally that someone's in a position of power, even if there's problems with that, but that, you know, we're fallen people.
Right.
And that's what's coming out here. We're not going to fix this by just making sure someone doesn't have power.
Right. No.
Even though, I mean, that might be part of it, but I think,
well, some people don't, some people cannot have power.
Yeah, for sure.
But just to decide power is, is wrong is foolish. It misses the whole point that every aspect of life is flawed.
If we took away people with power, we'd still have lots of problems.
We have all the people without the power.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's not, that's not the point. Yeah. Yeah. Kruger talks about, in my post, I outline both some of the tactics that spiritual abusive leaders employ. We talked about some of that now. The manipulation, I think, is honestly a huge one. And shaming and that sort of thing, which is all sort of tied to that. But one thing along with all that is, and this is something that's hard to know always how to work through. We want to be careful in our churches not to quote gossip, but sometimes that prohibition against gossip is actually weaponized as a way to silence people from sharing the abusive behavior that has happened to them, and thus enable an abuser to abuse multiple people, and they all sort of keep quiet about it, and they all think it's a one-off or something.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that maybe we could talk, because like it is genuinely not always easy to know, like, because it's all—I mean, all of us like juicy stories, and so there's a tendency that some of us have that is not always healthy to be like, spread this too far and wide. On the other hand, I've seen bad effects when people are told, "Don't talk about this." And often in abusive situations, the leaders will say, "Don't talk about this," but then they'll talk about it. So it often is a way of just them giving their spin on the story while shutting down anyone else from having a voice. So I don't know. That is a thing that I think is worth kind of disambiguating a little bit.
I mean, I think, I mean, obviously gossip is a thing, but it, maybe we can think of it like this. If someone is sharing a situation that happened that was difficult or something with a leader, and people feel like there's a potential for gossip, well, what is the proper way, even if something was potentially problematic, what is the proper way for this to be handled? And it better not be go share it with the ministry if this is like, if that's the party that the person is concerned about. Right. Like, there's got to be a system in a church where, you know, maybe someone is coming and talking to you and you feel like, you know, I think other people need to be involved.
Right.
Who are those people?
Right.
And how should that properly be handled?
Right.
Because I feel like if we don't make a very clear way for people to, you know, have something that they want to, you know, complain about, you could say, outside of just going back to the person
right.
they have to complain with in the first place, well, then you can't really turn to them and say, well, you're just gossiping.
Right.
Because you haven't given them an alternative.
No.
And I think sometimes that is frankly where it is in some churches, where there isn't a clear channel of how this should be handled, you know, whether there's, you know, if hopefully if it was with one person, you know, the other elders aren't just going to automatically back the difficult, right. the bad behavior.
But it's, And Kruger is pretty strong on this. He's like, look, you got to have a group that to sort of hear these types of complaints, and it's got to include people that are not just elders.
Yeah.
Right. You can't just, you know, but weaponizing the process, saying like pastor saying, well, you didn't follow the right steps in Matthew 18 or something like that. It's just another way of just sort of trying to wave a magic wand over the situation, where honestly, the whole idea of like going to the person who sinned against you first is not always applicable in a case like this, because the whole point is that person has power and you don't.
Yeah.
The power differential changes the dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And so generally, you know, if in a situation where you genuinely have sort of been the victim of spiritual abuse, the whole point is you go to them and say, hey, they'll cover it up. You basically tip them off.
Right.
And they'll make sure that you don't talk or whatever. You have to go to other people.
Yeah.
This is not a situation where it's peers. This is a situation where it's people, you know, lower on the totem pole that also, if this is a situation that is not a one-off and is not misinterpreted by the victim or something like that, if it's genuine, so probably it's good to have a couple other people hear you out and think about it and maybe hear the other side, whatever. First, but if it is viewed as, if it is something that's like, no, this is a thing, the church actually needs to know about it, right? It's not just like, well, we'll try to clear it up. No, the whole church does kind of have a responsibility to know this is a tendency, because it's something that's happening with a leader who has broad responsibility, has a relationship to the whole church, not just one member to another.
Right. And I feel like one thing that happens, and I've had this happen in multiple situations, is that people just need to be aware of the fact that you might have a really good relationship with your leader that is completely non-abusive and is genuinely good. There isn't something wrong there. And yet there is someone else who, for whatever reason, you know, got on the nerves of the pastor or whatever, and there actually is a problem.
Yeah.
And I've just seen too many situations where someone being, you know, misused in some way by a leader, and then you go talk to someone else, and then their response is not, well, what happened here? How can we work through this? But it's, well, I have a good relationship.
Right.
I trust my leader.
Right.
Therefore, I have to reject what you're saying.
Right.
Which just is too simplistic.
It can
be very possible that the person that's involved, the third party, whatever, is truly doesn't have any issue with the leader. And yet, you know, well, I think we need to get back to, you know, if someone has a grievance, you know, what is the grievance? You know, what happened? You know, if the person said, you know, this person's, you know, yelled at me and my wife, and, you know, well, he never did that to me. Well, that's not the question.
So what?
The question is, did he yell at you and your wife? And or whatever the claim is. And has this happened? And can this be verified? And if it can be verified, the fact that that never happened to you is frankly irrelevant.
Totally
it has
irrelevant.
Nothing to do with what's going on.
Right. It's like, someone accused of murder.
Right.
You like, bring up
never killed me.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, that's interesting. Yeah. Not really.
Yeah. So I think some of that comes back to the way that we tend to not have enough nuance in how we look at people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because both of us could have, you know, relationships with people in leadership or out that are good and don't have anything at all problematic. And yet we know ourselves that just because we have close friends and friendships that are going well, it doesn't mean that we don't have some where we haven't been everything we need to be.
Oh, right, right.
And if someone would just come back and be like, well, you know, I'm great buddies with Drew. You know, we don't have any issue. It's like, well, you know.
Good.
I can't say that no one has any issue with me. And the fact that there are some people that don't, does in no way excuses
doesn't mean that
me
nobody
from,
does.
Yeah, right. The things I need to be more sensitive about.
Right, yeah. And Kruger talks a lot about that, the idea that you can never assume that just because somebody seems to be so great means they're incapable of doing some things that are pretty terrible or having a certain streak that a lot of people don't see, but a streak that's very destructive.
Which unfortunately can be there even with people that are genuinely used of God. There can be something there that's...
Oh, yeah, that's pretty ugly. Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that's a very important point. Yeah.
I feel like the more I interact with... The more I get to know myself in some sense and interact with others and people in leadership, the more I feel like this kind of early, almost infatuation stage with certain people, it just doesn't work as well because you see how flawed we are. And I think it's good to recognize that. It can be painful to see that, you know, an incredibly good relationship or, you know, leader was involved in my life that did an immense good for me. And yet there were some ugly things in the closet that ended up being destructive.
Right.
And somehow we have to be able to work through that and see the negativity while still recognizing something good happened, which I think is a really hard lesson to learn because we just want to either kind of whitewash the stuff or kind of, you know, make everything, just say the whole thing was corrupt.
Cancel.
And it's just, cancel. We can't do that.
No. And if we read the Old Testament well, we'll get that because like, despite the fact that we like to sometimes whitewash our biblical characters, the Bible doesn't.
Oh, right.
And it's just like, yeah, here's these guys. They're some of the great, not heroes. They're great, the great important characters of the Old Testament. And it's just like, oh yeah, and they did these terrible things. Yeah. And it just, it doesn't feel the need to cancel them or to sort of make them saints. Mm-hmm. And if we could follow that same pattern, I think that's kind of, it would be helpful. However, you know, in abusive situations and stuff, we like drastic things do need to happen. The response is not, well, you've done a lot of good. You've done some bad. Yeah. Well, we'll give you a little timeout. No, no, no. Mm-hmm. Like drastic action needs to happen. But we're talking about our sort of view of people and leaders in general.
Yeah. Because I think even if the drastic action does happen or does need to happen, it simply doesn't cancel everything out.
No.
I think at some level we have to recognize that, you know, in some sense, we all need to be canceled at a certain point. You know, like we've all done things that are really messed up and really in need of redemption.
Right.
That's all of us. And it I think is. Somehow having that perspective and seeing recognizing the fact that for all the good things that we feel like we've done, there's things there that
they're not
probably
so
in 10 years we're going to have to face that we don't see right now.
Right.
And having that is going to give us, I think, a little more humility and hopefully grace in working with the difficult situations.
Yes, yes. However... However, these types of situations it's important to not just say, well, everyone's a sinner. Everyone fails.
Yeah.
No, taking God's authority and using it as a weapon for one's own ends to build one's own kingdom, and destroy people in the process is something that's particularly heinous in a lot of ways and means. Not everyone is qualified to hold spiritual power, spiritual authority. Maybe you're still a Christian.
Yeah.
But the bar for holding authority in the church is pretty high.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's, it takes, you know, a certain ability to handle the authority well, in order to do that. And if, you know, otherwise you're disqualified.
And in some cases, that simply is going to mean that people that seem to be having a thriving ministry on other levels, you know, it's like, you know, well, everything's going great. You know, he's verbally abused multiple congregants in the past month, but, you know, he's a great preacher.
Right.
Sorry. Like, that's just not going to work.
Right. No.
And I think, sometimes, unfortunately, there is this tendency to try to keep someone in a position of power because of the good results that are there, as we were.
Right, exactly.
Earlier, and that's we just can't.
Have no, that's not good. Yeah, that's right. Something I was about to say with that. But yeah, no, it's Oh, yes. One, I think, for me, like, different personality types, I think, are more prone to this type of thing. But I can see in myself that given a certain set of situations, I'm so not immune to becoming that kind of person. And one thing I think that's really good and helpful is for me, I know I have, like, there's certain parts of my life where I have a little bit of influence and stuff. And I think it's really good that I don't have that in all areas of life. Like, I'm really happy that I'm part of a church where I'm not a leader. And I know that, like, the leaders in my church, you know, respect me or whatever, but I'm under them. And they're, you know, they would come, the church would come and, you know, get me into trouble if I needed it. And I think that's really healthy when people start, especially younger guys, start grabbing onto positions of influence too early, too soon, and feel like they need to have authority in their business, in spiritual life and stuff like that. It's a disaster.
Right.
It's really, I think, good and important to, especially for a long time, especially, you know, for a number of years, to have at least one large part of your life in which you are, no one's like overly impressed with you, and you're clearly under other people's authority. I think it's just a really healthy, and this is, I mean, I think it's part of why Paul says, like, leaders shouldn't be recent converts. Because you haven't been around long enough to have some of that, you know, knocked out of you. So yeah, that's just for, I think in my, you know, younger days, you have this more of this, man, if I could just be this awesome Christian leader and that sort of thing, right? And then you get a little older and you're like, well, in some sense, that would be fun. But I think it would probably be really bad for me and bad for a lot of other people. And so, again, I'm just so grateful for a place where I can, I cannot, you can, you know, I can be under. So, yeah, there's millions of other things we could say. And again, this is a heavy topic. It's a complicated topic because people's experiences are different in this type of thing. And so in some ways, maybe it sounds like we've talked in vague generalities. But there's always going to be room for, you know, people misunderstanding or criticizing. But I think, I don't know, some of the last things I want to just emphasize again is we're not saying this is happening everywhere. And our fundamental posture to our spiritual leaders should be one of appreciation, blessing, trust, etc. But secondly, spiritual abuse is a very real thing. And it's not something that's an Anabaptist thing. It's not something that's just an out there thing. It happens everywhere, and including our circles. And so it's something that, if you haven't experienced it, should be sensitive. Recognize that just because you haven't doesn't mean other people in your church other people have. And be sensitive. Don't act as though, like you've been saying, don't act as though it's impossible. And then try to work to set up structures to provide accountability, to provide a sounding board, a place where people can go if they have experienced this type of thing. Recognize, have mercy on people who've been victimized this way. Recognize, as Kruger points out, that for some people, just living a Christian life is going to feel like they're being traumatized over all over again for a long time. And recognize that, hey, some people are going to really struggle for a long time because of things that they've been through in their previous church, and don't judge them for that. Try to recognize that probably the best thing we can do is to model a healthy spiritual environment, and that can be a hospital, you know, for them. So I don't know. Those are some of the things, but I really encourage people to go and read Kruger's book. And I've had people in the last year or two, when I've talked about this a little bit and kind of recommended the book, that have said, whoa, this, like, this is, oh yes, now I understand what's happening in my situation. So, it's very important to be aware and to try to create environments where what it means to be a leader is modeled after Jesus. Mm.